I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Theo Walcott, winger, footballing prodigy, and the player most likely to be described by journalists as a speedster in football history. Played for Southampton, Arsenal and Everton. England's youngest ever player, won 3 FA Cups with Arsenal, 47 international caps. Fun fact, his uncle directed 4 Harry Potter films, and Theo is clearly similarly creative as he's a prolific author. He's not only written a series of kids' books, he also wrote his autobiography Growing Up Fast, aged just 22. But what will the book club and special guest comedian Dame Baptiste think of it? Find out in today's A Football Book Club.
I was actually quite interested to hear about Theo's journey to find out if there was maybe a dark horse that was beneath this very stoic aesthetic, but I was wrong.
I'm really glad he's got Mel in his life, because he is a strange little boy when it comes down to it.
Is this the first time Adolf Hitler's been mentioned in a book we've read?
Yes. Hey. Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Andy Weir, more Joe Kinnear. Thank you. Oh, that's gone down badly. I didn't write it. James Wiley sent that in, so thank you for sending it in. Sorry.
I don't think you've never backed off one that quickly before. What? Usually you kind of go, what do you think of that, guys? Is that one good? Do you like that one? That one, you immediately were like, no, it's a bad one. It's a bad one.
When we have guests, I feel particularly self-conscious whenever this happens. If Dane isn't rolling about on the floor throughout this show, I'm going to be like, oh God, I'm sorry, Dane. Yeah.
we're usually
really cool.
I think you're very cool. Don't use me as your barometer for comedy within this sphere. I liked it.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much.
That just cool. Everything that doesn't land on a listener, just be like, that's not my, I didn't write that. I listened.
It's James Wiley. I don't like that guy.
I also take credit for everything that's good of James Wiley's. Anyway, I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we'll be reading such classics as David Platt's Achieving the Goal and Per Mertesacker's Big Friendly German. But today,
legitimately a very good book. Sorry, just quickly jump in.
Have you read it?
My friend has read it, and I have read bits from it, and I really like it.
It's like
an Amazon review where I sort of go, I bought it for my friend, 3 stars.
Brilliant book. I haven't read a page, but it's incredible. Bizarre. But today we're reading Theo Walcott's Theo, Growing Up Fast. And joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
He's actually read this one. James Balgen.
Hello.
And please welcome to the show a brilliant comedian who you'll have seen on Live at the Apollo, Mot the Week, 8 out of 10 Cats, his own show, Sunny D and Bamus, and you'll have heard him on his podcast, Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. Surprise, surprise, it's Dame Baptiste.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, fellas. Woo! Real pleasure.
It is.
Thank you.
Great to have you on. It is great to have you on, talking about your specialist subject. Would you say?
Within the context of this particular episode of the podcast, yes, I would.
Okay. He is now your special subject. Yeah.
You're going to suddenly like pivot to Barry Ferguson, and you'll be like, oh my God, what?
Not Bazza.
You're a big Arsenal fan, Dane.
I am a big Arsenal fan. I think that supporting Arsenal has been a tumultuous affair. I think it's definitely helped me to manage my emotional complex a lot more. I wouldn't say that Arsenal put me in therapy, But therapy has definitely helped my relationship with Arsenal.
Wow.
You're in a safe space for this. You're joined by a Spurs and Liverpool fan, so I think you're
And an Arsenal fan.
So, and another Arsenal fan. Yeah.
So. Yeah, yeah. So we're all very friendly here.
We're here for you.
When did you go in? Was there a moment you went into therapy that can trigger from Arsenal? As in, was there a moment from Arsenal that would have sent you into therapy?
I do remember it was when Arsenal lost 6-2 against Man United.
Oh.
And I remember because I was taking a train back from Edinburgh. Uh-huh. And there was a kid on the train who was watching the game in real time. And every time like Man United scored, he was like running up and down the carriage being like, we scored again and again. And I was like, I want to boot this kid in the face through the train window and spit on his parents. And I was like, it's not okay to feel that way, Dane. You need to get some help. And then afterwards, as a sign of like, matter of urgency, there was some immediate signings made. So I think like Per Mertesacker was signed.
Yes, Arteta,
who, Judo Baptista maybe as well. Yeah.
This 2012 or so, right?
It's the 8-2.
I was going to say, yeah, I think there's two more goals. Dane was too busy kicking that kid to remember those last
goals. I've repressed. As I mean, I think I've repressed, and I think this day I'm still winning.
Okay.
Theo scored that day, didn't he? I have a memory of Theo scoring and then picking up the ball and going like, come on, we can save this. And it was like 6-1. You're like, Theo, just give it up, mate. It's fine.
I feel kind of doubly bad now that we've kind of just rubbing everything in by making you relive all of this by reading 360 pages or whatever it is of this.
It's important. It was important to be able to reflect on the progress that I've made since then.
That's good. So, healing process has begun. Yeah.
It was needed, and I'm definitely still an Arsenal fan. I'm very very enthusiastic about where the team is at the moment. But yeah, it's been up and down. That's for sure.
It's
been up and down.
I feel like this could turn into a therapy session a little.
I mean, it definitely could.
In this book, where I was like, oh no, I don't have to remember this. There was a bit that he mentioned, which was when Arsenal were, it was sort of during the we're not going to win the title but we're there or thereabouts years, and it was when Arsenal took the lead in the 95th minute against Liverpool and then conceded in the 90, like it must have been the 99th or 111th minute because of extra time and because I think someone had gotten injured, and I was at that match and I remember thinking like, that is my version of purgatory. That is like the hell of sitting around waiting for Liverpool to take that penalty that they will inevitably score. Was like, it went on forever and it was like, oh, what are we doing here? What is happening?
It's so stressful. I think there's also losing out on the Carling Cup too.
Oh God. Oh yeah, I have memories of that.
It was Birmingham.
It was Femi Martins. I was in Northern Ireland with my like parents-in-law, and usually with football, I'm like, it's okay, what can you do? But I was just sort of like on the floor, being like, I need a moment. I really need a moment. I can't take this. Sorry, this is like a joint therapy session. I'm so sorry.
I'm savoring all this.
Arsenal fans, this is things we've had to internalize for a very long time. I think it was also. I want to say FA Cup, or might have been Carling Cup again, when Arsenal lost to, I think we lost to Birmingham and Titus Bramble scored.
Wigan.
Oh my goodness. And I mean, I'm cool with Titus Bramble now, but at the time I was like, of all the people to score, like,
yeah,
there was just this period where it was like everybody just kept finding their mojo against Arsenal. Like everyone just had a point to prove. And
yeah, you
know, Bentley comes up quite a few times in the book.
Bentley,
I love that guy. I can't relate to any of this, guys, because there's nothing depressing ever about being a Spurs fan ever. Nothing but joy with Spurs. Anyway, great choice with this book because obviously Theo's just retired, so this is about as close to topical as we've ever been. This show, like, we exclusively read books that are like 25 years old. So for once, this is good timing. Good timing, Dane. And the book itself came out in 2011 when he was very much playing for Arsenal at the time, Wolcott. Probably at his prime, around that age.
Injured
a lot, but probably at his prime. He talks about his meteoric rise, setting all kinds of records, like when he got picked for England when he was like 10 or whatever he was. Mm-hmm. And he's probably set another record here, I think, because I'm pretty sure he's the youngest player's book we've read. So is in the, at the time he wrote it, I think it's the youngest book we've ever done. We did Depay's book and he was about 26, I think. Maybe younger.
Well, technically, we did Michael Owen's book just after the World Cup, didn't we?
Oh, good point. Yeah, right. No,
not to, yeah.
Yeah, well, scrap that. one record Theo hasn't got. But anyway, let's find out what everyone thinks of the book as we read Theo Walcott's Growing Up Fast. So, over the show, we're going to be getting to know Theo and our new friend Dane. There's a quiz and a dramatic reading. But first, let's see what Amazon's saying. The book has 4.3 stars from 58 ratings, including not bad. Including not bad. A 3-star review from Richard DePensia. What a name. a well-spoken man talks slowly about his fast-paced career.
That is a great description.
That is exactly what a person called Richard DePensia would write about that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Richard DePensia was someone who deposed the Edward II in the 13th century or the 14th century. So,
and he was a huge fan of Theo Walcott.
Yeah, he's been keeping up to date with things. It's good.
Yeah.
But not as verbose as he used to be fair. Yeah. But yeah. Sometimes you've got to use your language economically, so
exactly.
I totally get where it's coming from.
Exactly. There was another one from Matt who gave it 1 star, which said, bought this for my brother for his birthday. He is a football fan and went to secondary school with Theo, so I thought I'd be interested, but since then I haven't heard anything about this, so assumed it's not worth it. There we go.
I like also that he's waiting for his brother to bring it up.
Yeah.
Like, he's not like, how's the book? He's like, yeah. If it's a really good book, he'll be like, I must tell you about Theo Walcott's book, Growing Up Fast. Yeah.
You remember Theo, my friend from school? Well,
I don't come up once in this book.
Is that why you bought it? Just to throw it in my fucking face that my football career didn't pan out like Theo's? Is that why? I never liked you. You know that.
Ruining dad's 50th.
You're a 1-star friend. That's what you are.
So that's what Matt and Richard DePensia think. But what did you all think about it? Let's start with our guest, Dane. What do you think of the book?
I think, as far as footballers go, I think that this book is probably a great source of inspiration for young and aspiring footballers and young men in general. Now, ooh. I say that. I think that's the best way to describe a book that is a... not boring isn't the word I would use. because one could argue that for a very young age and the focus that it would have been required to be kind of disciplined throughout his career, I think that Theo appeared to be a very stable and very focused player throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
And by that token, I would say that, you know, he would be a good inspiration for aspiring players. I mean, he rarely seems to get in trouble. There's very little that alludes to any issues he would have had with, like, women, because he had had the same partner for the duration of his career. Mm-hmm. And I think that in most of his interactions, even at the most tense, he remains very stoic in terms of how he kind of reacts to things. Like, I think that Theo Walcott has, like, a few stock replies to adversity. even though it's not necessarily at points massively engaging in that respect, it's a very easy way of seeing how he was able to kind of stay on the straight and narrow and achieve as much as he did in his career, which is, like, as I said, I'm just trying to say, not say he was just boring. I don't think
For someone who says, like, I don't want to use the word boring, but you have perfectly described a boring book, I think.
The thing is, I'm not sure if it's a boring book. I just think it's maybe that he was so immersed in his career that paid very little attention to everything else. Mm. That being said, I think what is very clear in the book is that his father is an avatar for his emotions. I think that anything that Theo didn't say or he did internalize, then his dad definitely represented that for him. So
he reminds me a bit of Ramsdale's dad. You know, he's always
absolutely.
He's like doing podcasts and slagging off the manager and stuff. It's like
he's coming on ours next week.
Yeah, we got some interesting things he'll say. But you're right. It's sort of like, it's like Theo can kind of go like, "Well, I didn't think this, but my dad was so angry. Like, oh my god, my dad would have wanted to kill Sven-Göran Eriksson, but I was very normal and cool." Do you think his dad exists? I guess he does. Yeah,
I hope so. I hope so. He's like a really great straw man, and it reminds me of like a Key and Peele sketch where Barack Obama has to remain really stoic and remain very diplomatic, whereas like he's got Luther, his like anger consultant, who's just like fuck the Republicans. So I think I think that Theo's references to his dad are like they're so funny and interesting that like there should be like a subgenre about football biographies which just focus on the dads who live vicariously through their sons and how they push them into football.
That
like,
is
there's got to be more has to be put into like football dads, I think.
Yeah,
unless it's Jermaine Pennant's dad.
Is that because his book was so bad?
No, wasn't his dad just not a very nice person? Wasn't there gunshots in the kitchen?
I think his dad was maybe somewhat of a criminal, but
yeah.
And it's the same with Troy Deeney as well. But that will also still be more a bit more riveting.
I agree.
I'll be up for that. I'll still be up for listening to that as well.
It'd be better than Jermaine Pennant's actual book, I think, which was...
Are we workshopping a new podcast right now?
Yeah, I like this. Double dads.
Double dad dads.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's like a Dance Mums like podcast, so there's got to be like Football Dads, is that already exists. That's like Talk Sport, really.
Yeah. Very true.
That's already a thing.
Yeah.
Angry people who think that...
My son could do better than that! You don't think so? That's why he's a wally.
So. Thank you very much, Aaron Ramsdale's dad. I think it's interesting because I think his dad seems really like in a lot of ways, yes, he seems definitely like he's living vicariously through his son. But he also like there's a bit where Theo talks about how his dad just doesn't shout that much or doesn't get that angry because then he sees like someone else's dad just go absolutely mad at his son Billy or just like get furious. He's on the sidelines during a match going like, pass it to Billy! Why don't you pass it to Billy? Billy, get the ball! Billy, get the ball! And eventually, like, the referee has to be like, "You sir, you must go away." But, like, the good twist there would be if it's like, there is no child called Billy here. You are not related to any of these people.
This is a netball game, sir. Get the fuck out of here. But no, I think yeah, I suppose it's not the most exciting book. I guess the key parts of the plot throughout his life are his initial England debut and then working through, and it kind of works through throughout the next couple of years, working back up to it, him wanting to get back into the England squad again.
Yes.
So I guess in that respect, it was kind of somewhat anticlimactic in terms of his reaction to it.
But I think
that might be just like how, and maybe that's how well the book conveys Theo Walcott's tone, because obviously there's a rich tapestry of experience that he has prior to the next World Cup that he wants to get the call up for.
Interesting. I mean, it starts off in about, you know, the thing that everyone remembers Walcott for, kind of maybe unfairly, I guess. I mean, he obviously had a great career, Walcott, but everyone probably immediately thinks of him being called up age 16. Was he 16? 18? I can't remember what he was.
It's 16.
I think it was 16. To the 2006 World Cup. And I don't want to talk too much about that World Cup because we talk about it every episode. Everyone's book. Everyone whose book we read seems to have gone to that World Cup. But there were two things that jumped out for me from that beginning. He writes about it pretty well, Walcott. He's quite honest in there. That's separate to the two things. But he actually is pretty honest. He's like, Gerard has criticized him, I think, in his autobiography being called up. And Walcott's like, yeah, it's fair enough. He should have criticized me a bit. And he's quite honest about it. But the two things that jumped out were Rooney being a psychopath, which the World Cup when he had was it metatarsal or something? His foot was damaged in some way. And he just kept kicking people to make sure his foot was better. and he walks into training and he says, "The big man's back." Apparently, that's the first thing he's said.
Such a weird thing for a guy who is 20 to say.
To a room of the balls he's got. I appreciate it. I think it's pretty good. But the biggest thing that we've never had so far in any of the books that have covered 2006 World Cup, the most shocking and fascinating bit of all, it's after they went out of the World Cup,
I know exactly what you're about to say.
Gradually, people filed out of the dressing room. It was a really long walk back to the coach. I was one of the first on it, and I could see everyone walking back, everyone looking down. Everyone had a pot noodle in his hand. Mr. Capello stopped that, of course, but after then, back then, we were always given a pot noodle after the game. What?
That's so funny.
No wonder the golden generation were wasted.
Okay, that's the height of scandal for Theo Walcott as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's him dropping the truth bombs we weren't ready for. Yeah, the truth bombs we weren't ready for was that, like, that we had an England team forced to subsist on pot noodle.
He says it's so casually as well. Like,
that's the thing. Yeah. It said so, and also I think James is right. In the sense that we've read this scene, like as James said, we've read the scene about 10 times, I would say, over the course of the past 3 years, because inevitably England going out against Portugal comes up every single time. But this is the first time we've had pot noodles in it. And it sort of feels like, do you know in James Bond, when it's suddenly like, I'm going to, like, you've watched like 50 James Bond films. And then in the most recent one, he's like, oh, this is just me driving my Ford Fiesta or my Rolex watch. It feels like someone's kind of like thrown a bit of product placement into that famous scene that we all know.
Wait, James Bond in a Ford Fiesta.
Yeah, there's a bit where he drives like a Ford Fiesta, isn't there? It's really weird. In like Casino Royale, he's like, what a great car this is, and it's like a Ford Fiesta, and everyone's like, okay. Which is super weird, but it sort of makes you kind of go like, wait, pot noodle? And then Theo Walcott's like, yes, that's right, pot noodle.
And then just moved on. Never mentioned again.
He says Capello put a stop to that. Just, even that's funny, just Capello coming in like, right, first thing on the agenda, pot noodles are gone. Yeah, if I see one Bombay bad boy, I swear.
Yeah. No chicken and mushroom anymore. No chicken and mushroom.
Like, obviously, that is definitely the first thing. If you said, like, you obviously we end our matches with a pot noodle, I'd be like, no. No, we're not. Sorry, go back one. Yeah. You have the one down, you have a pot noodle.
Exactly. In their defense, though, the instant noodle market was a lot smaller than it is today.
True.
Mm. Like, you know, it was like pot noodles and like super noodles, and that was pretty much the whole, you know, particular gamut that you have. Whereas now you have a cornucopia of various different options available where you can have from vermicelli to udon noodles. So, you know,
very good point.
It
truly is a golden age for instant noodle.
I think even now, though, McDonald's sponsored the England national team, right?
What was that?
Were they?
I think McDonald's sponsored the England national team now. So I really hope they're not getting Big Macs after games. There you go, guys.
They're getting a Big Macs in a cup.
Half time. Chili cheese bite.
But this is like after, you know, I think Wenger himself, he kind of revolutionized football nutrition, right? This is after Wenger was in and doing all that. The fact that this is 2006. Yeah. This seems way too late for that. Way too late for that. But.
Yeah,
bizarre. But that's what things. And then, like Dane says, after that point in the book, it's kind of how he reacted to that and how he started to actually make a name for himself, because that was he's thrust into the limelight a bit too early at that point. Goes back over his.
I wasn't aware of his shoulder and back injury.
I didn't know that either.
So I think that obviously, you know, kind of. Well, lucky we say it didn't necessarily plague his career, but I think given the fact that it was a dislocated shoulder and how often he continued to play, like, I do have to definitely commend him for that.
Mm.
You do kind of want to, because obviously that was the period where Arsenal were paying off the Emirates and so didn't have a lot of squad depth. You do kind of wonder a little bit, like Wilshere, where it's like, was he pushed to play a few too many games when he was too young, which meant he couldn't prolong his career later.
That's a rare level. We don't usually do much football insight on this podcast. I'm generally like, wow, that's pretty smart, actually.
But I think the entire pre-VAR period was definitely problematic for Arsenal, who definitely suffered a lot of injuries, because he references Eduardo's injury as well as Ramsey's injury as well. You know, and it's like teams such as Stoke, since they've left the Premiership, don't really look like they're going to return anytime soon with that kind of style, because teams like that, they used to kind of be the antithesis of what Arsenal represented in terms of like technicality and stuff like that as well. It was just like basically brutes trying to destroy these athletes.
The Eduardo thing, I think people forget with Ramsey, because Ramsey went on to have an amazing career after that moment. And if anything, it kind of like it sort of spurred him on, not to say that it was a good thing, but like it did, his recovery from it, I think, contributed to a lot of his like mental fortitude. But Eduardo, Eduardo was so good.
Oh, yeah, he was so good.
We're back in therapy. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say, yeah. Doing all you can to drag Dame back to that. Actually, talking of father figures, you mentioned them earlier. Mm-hmm. Was it interesting? Yeah, and like, we're kind of the father figure within Arsenal is Mr. Wenger, Arsene Wenger. Mm-hmm. There was a slightly different side to Wenger in this. I wonder how he thought he came across, Dane, because on page 307, there's a bit where he goes mad and he whacks some chewing gum over in the change rooms. Do you remember that bit where he's like, you don't usually see Wenger angry. You usually think of him so composed, but there's a bit where he goes, it was after they played Liverpool. Someone stunk the place out 45 minutes. He was throwing stuff and kicking other things, and there was a lot of swearing. I didn't want to catch his eye. None of the players did, so we all had our heads down. I kept sneaking the odd glance just to keep a check on where he was. At one point, he grabbed a load of sticks of chewing gum and was chucking them everywhere. I saw Pat Rice's assistant sit down while the boss was swearing at the defence and having a go at them about how they had dropped off too much. That individually, I just don't ever see that side to Wenger. I mean, the chewing gum thing.
Wenger was part of that progressive wave, wasn't he? So that was when the teacups being kicked around was phased out.
Interesting. In the same way he revolutionized,
How can you communicate as a back line? If your breath stinks, take these chewing gum sticks and distribute them. Of course you're not linking up. All of you have halitosis in here. It's disgusting. All testament to his genius, as well as him improving nutrition, just improving grooming art overall.
He's
to talk to people with fresher breath.
You're giving them too much Wrigley's room.
Oh my god. Can you imagine Arsene Wenger making that pun and then
it was the best speech I heard.
And then being like, don't you dare laugh at that excellent pun.
Yeah.
Don't you fucking dare.
But is it just me? I don't think I've ever heard of him being angry in any of the books that you've read. We've read quite a few Arsenal ones.
I think there's the image of Wenger being like, you know, the professor and being like able to communicate and able to sort of like revolutionize things and see things in a very calm and controlled way. But I think in the later, the pre-VAR and like the late 2010s, or so not late 2010s, late 2000s, there's a kind of like Wenger getting very frustrated with the whole situation that he finds himself in, which is constantly not able to challenge these teams and always falling away and not quite winning the league. And the bit where he kicks, there's a famous thing of him kicking the water bottle and then he gets sent to the stands. So like he definitely has an angry side, certainly. True. It is weird because you don't really usually see it. And I think what's interesting is Theo seems to waft through this book in a weird way. Like he kind of like
it's
like a
so lot- true. It's like it's almost like he's definitely obviously looking back in reflection. But I think it's because of the inception of Theo Walcott's career, basically involves in playing like one amateur team in Berkshire and then basically getting bumped up straight away into like Southampton. So I think it's because his trajectory appeared to be, obviously I wouldn't say it's easy, but it seemed to be so quick. I guess part of the rigors of trying to make it as a footballer, he almost seemed to bypass that because he was picked up so early and so young.
That's a really
good point. Definitely affects the show.
That's a really good point. I was just going to say, it's like every other book we've read, they've all been all the players have been so desperate. Like from the minute I was born, I was kicking a ball and I knew I had to make it. I wanted to. Walcott just like turns up to a kid's game, not even meant to be playing, his mate's playing, immediately scores a hat trick, seems to get scouted. And then he's a footballer.
Can you imagine that drive to McDonald's when they were both going home in his friend's mom's car? No, I thought you did really well, Billy.
Oh my god, yeah.
Before that day.
You forget because he got called up to the season he got called up to the World Cup.
Yeah.
At the start of it, he was a substitute for Southampton. He had never played a professional game of football before that moment. Bonkers.
Before what moment?
Before he got called up. Before in 2005, 2006, that season, he was a substitute. The first Southampton game, he was on the bench.
Yeah.
That was his first moment he was part of a match team.
Yeah,
like part of a match squad. At the end of that season,
he
gets called up for a World Cup.
So
other people like
he had a good season. He had a decent season for Southampton.
He had a decent season, but he had not played a full game of football. At the start of that season, and at the end of that season, he gets called up to World Cup. That is bananas.
Yeah. Especially at that age. Yeah. It is.
It is unbelievable.
And I do, because there's a sort of like, there's a lot of politics and everything. He is a bit of a pawn in all of these things. Like, you know, he's a pawn at Southampton, where he's between Harry Redknapp and Clive Woodward. And there's a bit where like Clive Woodward is begging him to stay at the club. And Theo Walcott just says, it was fun. He was begging me to stay at the club. The pasta was very good that day. So you're sort of like, he has no sort of understanding of the wider world around him. And I think similarly with like Wenger could have been like, you know, stuck in these like player power battles that he has no idea about, but Walcott doesn't know, because he's just a kid, and he's just kind of like, he's sort of like burst in and he's like, hello, I'm good at football, do you want me to play for you?
I actually wanted to play for Liverpool, but then I was signed to Arsenal, and that was fine too. there's so many points where like I can imagine someone who's football dreams didn't pan out in the same way, would have thrown this book across the room several times. Then I bought my girlfriend a Ferrari. Yeah. She was happy. That's just for sure.
this is a reference that Dane, thankfully, you won't get, because you haven't had to read these books, as far as we know. But it could almost be a Gary Lineker's favorite football stories. It's like a kid who's like, it's like a short story about a boy who's just like one day woke up and he's a professional footballer and now he's living the dream. Yeah,
it is weird.
It is weird. Yeah,
like a children's book kind of playing out, and
complete aside, by the way, is this the first time Adolf Hitler's been mentioned in a book we've read? I think it is.
I hope so.
I think we've had Saddam Hussein before. I don't think we've had Adolf Hitler. You're right.
We've had Saddam Hussein, definitely.
I might save that for our out of context segment. The actual reason, but some context
it's
has been
so
given.
Funny.
It is really funny. I'm sure someone's mentioned Hitler in the past.
I'm sure.
You read Letizia's book. I'm sorry. I might cut that line, don't I?
Surely not.
Well, actually, you know what? Let's do the out of context segment now. Let's do the out of context now. We're coming up to the break anyway. Has anyone got a line they particularly enjoyed in the book that they would like to read?
Yes, I've got one. We were shown around the dressing rooms too, something I found terrifying. When we went into Chelsea's dressing area, the first thing I saw was Gianfranco Zola's bare backside as he reached for a towel. It's the fact that he finds it terrifying. No, not the backside, please.
I signed immediately. very good one. Very good. Anyone else got a little?
I think keeping with the trend of nostalgia for fascism.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a quote. Is the Frankenstadion is next to the ruins of the parade grounds where Adolf Hitler staged his huge Nazi rallies in the 1930s. But we didn't see any of that.
the second bit of that line is the best bit.
I agree.
Did you see any Nazi rallies? No, we didn't see any. No, I guess they weren't doing them that day.
We were 76 years too late.
Exactly. I feel like, but that's the thing, that innocence is obviously, I guess people would always conflate that with the lack of intellect that some footballers have, but me, I think this just speaks to like the somewhat level of innocence that Theo Walcott has.
It is definitely innocent. Yeah. It feels very innocent, the whole book, and I think that's part of it.
It is, because actually I think Walcott seems a pretty smart guy, actually. Whenever you hear him, he's
he's 22 and he's, you know, and he's writing this book. It's like,
he's got his head screwed on.
I think I actually definitely romanticize the idea that we live in a world where people are like, and here's where Hitler stages rallies, and kids would be like, is he going to be here today? That's the world I want to live in, where people don't even, the Nazism and fascism is so far from the minds of people that they're like speaking about Nazis in the same way they would about going to like an enclosure at a zoo and be like, will there be any gorillas? Not likely. not here at Euro Disney, no.
And I was going to say fingers crossed, but...
Not today, I'm afraid, kids.
Joseph Goebbels is very tired in his enclosure. I'm coming out tonight.
they're going to feed Hess! Oh my God, they're going to feed Hess!
James, out of context for you?
Oh, yeah, got one. I'm happy to admit I was more scared, but she screamed more. It's just that hers were happy screams.
Jesus.
Weird, weird section. That is an iconic moment that I really hope we talk about later.
Okay.
It's very funny.
Which is very, very, a lot more innocent than anyone who's hearing that out of context thinks it is.
I was going to say,
You know, I think that even again, like Theo Walcott's long-term relationship with his partner, Mel, I consider to be very wholesome when you consider the culture within football.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, while, you know, I think people will look at these books for a certain level of voyeurism about what happens off pitch, I think that the fact that there are footballers that Theo Walcott exists, again, I have to say, definitely a good inspiration to young people in particular.
Definitely.
Just a regular guy. It gives definitely some kind of Paul Scholes vibes.
Without the strange thing that Paul Scholes did with his feet. Anyway,
apart from the thing with the feet,
that's a good point. I've got one last out of context line, and that is, it was great to be out there playing and getting booted around by Gary Neville. So there we go. That's my line. It is now time for a break, but we'll have more from Theo when we return as we talk early days at Southampton, getting into a scrape with Dennis Wise, and Theo puts some underpants on his head. Hello, James here, and we at Football Book Club want you. That's right, you, to join something special, something exclusive. We want you to join the Football Book Club Club. The Football Book Club Club is the home of even more Football Book Club action, and now it's cheaper than ever to become a full member at just £3.50 a month. There's three tiers. By signing up to our Bookworm tier, you get an exclusive members-only episode of Football Book Club every fortnight, filling the gap between regular episodes with more book club fun and, frankly, a frighteningly deeper analysis of whatever book we're reading the episode. Plus, you get access to all the bonus episodes recorded so far. There's over 20 of them on there. Well, 20. And most excitingly, you'll get your hands on a special edition Money Can't Buy bookmark you can put inside your personal copy of Darren Huckabee's Hucks. All that for just £3.50 a month. For context, that's a tenth of the cost of a cameo message from Ian Dowie. And a cameo is what, 30 seconds? For that price, you get 10 episodes. That's 3.5 hours of content. I dread to think what you have to pay to get 3.5 hours of content from Ian Dowie. You'd have to remortgage your house. But I digress. And if that's still not right for you, if you really love the show, you can join the Super Bookworm tier. And if you like the show but don't want to pay that much, you can support the show for just £1 a month on the Casual Reader tier. You won't get the bonus episodes, but yes, you will get that bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for more details. So if you enjoy the show, please consider joining up. It really does help us to keep making the show, because books don't grow on trees. They are trees, kind of. And trees are expensive. But the Football Book Club isn't. So join today at patreon.com/footballbookclub or by following the link in the episode notes. See you back at the clubhouse.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Theo Walcott's Growing Up Fast. Are you still glad you chose the book, Dane?
I am still glad I chose the book. I think that Theo Walcott is probably the best person to diplomatically explain that journey throughout Arsenal during a very difficult period. Because, you know, I'm not prepared to hear it from Nicholas Bentler.
I forgot about him. I could have offered that to you. Because I offered you a few. I should have offered Bentler. I forgot. But I offered you...
I feel like I know how it would go. They all sucked, but I was the best.
Yeah.
And I mean the whole Prem.
Yeah. I think you're probably right.
At some point, I realised there needed to be a new league for me.
Yeah. So,
the Bentler League.
I thought the Super League was going to be. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, because I offered you that. I think I offered you this Mertesacker's book and Lehman. And, you know, in keeping with the show, I thought you'd had a problem with Germans. That's why you chose Walcott's. Yeah.
It's Germans and Danes. It's
Germans
fine.
And Danes.
Right. I think I'm pretty cool with the Germans. I'm not sure. I think I would have just found that Per Mertesacker book maybe somewhat triggering because it did come off after that 8-2
yeah,
defeat.
Sure.
But no,
there
definitely
been a lot of conversations about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Loved the guy. Not the paciest player, but he did a good job for the duration. But I was actually quite interested just to hear about Theo's journey, but I hadn't realised that he basically was thrust into like professional football like almost immediately.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to find out if there was maybe a dark horse that was beneath this very stoic, I suppose, aesthetic that he offered to the rest of the game. But I was wrong.
it's just what you think.
Yeah.
He's sort of unique though, isn't he, in the sense that like as James says, his defining moment is really not something to do with him, which is it's him being plucked out of obscurity, not even obscurity, being plucked out of like nothing to not play in a World Cup, and then he has to sort of like pick up the pieces of that career afterwards, and he does really well at doing that. But I don't think there's no one really comparable.
No,
I'd say in football.
Yeah, I agree. Where there's a moment that really, there's quite a few of them. Most books we do always have that kind of moment that you remember them for. Like I don't know, we haven't read a Beckham book, but I'm guessing it would probably start with the kick out of Simeone or whatever, or those kind of. Yeah. There's always like a defining moment that, but yeah, his one is particularly unusual. I'm trying to think if we've had anyone who
even Pennant had a sort of like this was the low point of my career and then I built it up, whereas Walcott's low point is both his high and his low, so it's a very hard. I can imagine, like, I would, if it were me, I would properly go off the rails afterwards, I think, because I'd just be very confused about what I could trust. Yeah,
but I think that might even inform the overall tone of the book, in that like what should be like trough points of his life, you know, because of the situations that they're based on, they are still pretty advantageous to your average player. That it's like,
that's true.
Well, I didn't get an England cap this time round, but you know, he's a
he never played cup for England.
Yes,
if you think
true.
About it,
yeah,
which is bizarre.
It is, and Defoe, who he got the place of, did. He scored in the 2010 World Cup, I think, didn't he?
He
that
did.
Is mad that he got in the team in front of Defoe. It's not like it was like a nobody striker. It was Jermaine Defoe, who was a brilliant player. Like,
England had lots of really good strikers. Yeah, that's what doesn't make sense.
Had a brilliant season as well that year, I think, didn't he? And very unlucky.
And also, like, Rooney was injured. It's so weird when you think about it. It's not even like, oh, we have the perfect strike force who are going to be fine, so there's no point in having a backup, that you don't need to worry about a backup. We had injured players. Yeah. We were bringing injured players, and the backup for the injured player was a child. Yeah. So bizarre. Oh, but also not his fault. Which is,
where was Andy Johnson's call-up? Where was Andy Johnson's call-up?
I was legitimately wondering that.
Andy Johnson actually played a surprising amount of times for him. I think he played about 8 times or so. Never scored.
Yeah.
I think.
Anyway, that's a little. Anyway, we're reading Theo Walcott's book. Jack, gonna move us on.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm really fascinated by. I think it's sort of a similar thing to Dane in the sense of I'm really fascinated by his family and how his family keep him sort of grounded, and particularly his relationship with Mel. His relationship with Mel, his long-term girlfriend who is stuck with him, I think is still with him now.
Yeah,
I don't know. I haven't checked that. Yeah. Like he very grounding and very like, cause we obviously did Colleen Rooney's book, a few weeks back. And the bizarre thing about Colleen being like in a similar situation to Mel, which is like the very, very, very young girlfriend of an potential England superstar. It seems like a strange thing where it starts with like, when Theo gets his call up, all the paparazzi are out there looking for pictures of him and Mel together. And there's a bizarre bit where like a paparazzi is sort of saying like, you know, there's good money on offer if you find the first picture of Wayne and his girlfriend, which again, she's a child. They're both children. It's so fucking weird. The fact that they then end up having a very stable and very good and very, it seems very pure relationship together. It's really sweet. It's really lovely.
And it's
great. I mean, Theo is mad, and there are several bits in this book where he is very, like, I think as all kids are, I suppose, but like there are so many bits that are where you're kind of like, I'm really glad he's got Mel in his life because he is a strange little boy when it comes down to it. there is a bit where Theo maps out his life.
Oh my god.
I would say is one of the funniest things that has ever been put onto a book for Football Book Club.
I agree.
It is a big diagram where he maps out his life, and it's in the picture section, and it's him saying basically like what he wants to do. We should take a photo of it. It's stuff like he plays football for Newbury, scores 77 goals, then goes to Southampton Academy, have a baby, get engaged with my wife, and then move into my mansion. At some point, though... that wife dies.
Yeah.
And he gets a new wife. And he says...
Wives die every day. Wives die every day. So.
And he sort of says like, oh, she dies. We don't get divorced. It's really sad that she dies, but I find someone else and it's okay. And then another wife, like my wife dies then later again. And then I'm alone and old and sad, but I played for Liverpool by this point and I've won loads of trophies, so it's okay. I have 10 years of being sad between the age of 85 and 95. Then I die and I get buried next to my wives, plural. So bizarre.
It is super weird. Yeah, it's
Theo is such a normal, he seems like such a normal guy, and the midway through he's like, well, obviously my wife will die, I guess, tragically young, and I'll be sad about it.
I imagine his teacher like sitting next to him while he's drawing this diagram. Like all he's meant to be doing is like visualizing how he's gonna get like through a bit of his life. Like you don't have to Theo, you don't have to specify all these things so much. They're like, at one point he says like everything's got a weird caveat to it. Like he goes, so after he retires from football, he says his next step will be go abroad to Jamaica. And then the next bit is get a house in Jamaica, but it's a small bungalow.
Because also at this point, Theo has been the most successful footballer ever in his brain. And he's like, well, I'll go to Jamaica and I'll get a small bungalow.
Sadly,
like,
and prices also are incredibly expensive over there. There's no way I'll be able to afford more than a bungalow.
I feel like a lot of his things are informed by maybe stories he's heard from other people.
Exactly.
That'll work. I'll slot it in. So whenever there's the gaps between football, he's like, oh, what's that? What should happen here? And he's overheard someone go, and then their wife died, and he's like, that sounds like what human, that sounds like it happens to humans. I'll put that in there.
That's for me. Yeah, my other favorite bit that I forgot is that he says at, because it's split into birth, old life, death.
Yeah.
And at old life afterwards he writes old boring life at 40 years old.
Oh jeez.
Very funny. And then immediately afterwards he says retirement from football but manage Liverpool FC and win trophies. Like it's just a thing that you would I'll have a go at managing Liverpool FC. Why not?
Exactly. And then I can see it. That's his life. It's like I wouldn't say it's sheltered, but you know, it's definitely within the context that you go from being a schoolboy football player to becoming a professional footballer.
Yeah.
Of course, these things just seem so much more achievable for you.
Yeah. And then you become a manager, and then like that's like a point on your career. You're like, become a manager, and we won the league 70 times. And yes, sure, it's nothing. You know,
if my wife was still around, she'd be really proud of it.
So. But also, after he buys his small bungalow, the next thing he says is, win the lottery.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything I want as an old man. Theo, you've already been a phenomenally successful footballer. You've already become a phenomenally successful manager. You've had a wonderful wife who's died. You've remarried, and now you want to win the lottery? Yep. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Same thing for someone else, Theo. It is baffling. But the ending where it says after 80, it says wife dies at the age of 85. Then it goes, it just says between 85 and 95, sad life at the age of 85 to 95. Then ... I die.
But I get to have a wife, a grave next to my wife.
Yes, so works out in
things
the end.
Are looking up for Theo. It is super weird. And it sort of speaks to Dane's right. It's that kind of thing of like he's kind of mapping out how his life should go, mm-hmm. in like sort of like taking from different places. And I think then the fact that his life has kind of, it hasn't been perfect at all. His life has not been perfect, but it just sort of, it then feels like he sort of has these ambitions, and it's like, and then I played for England, and then I played for Arsenal, and it was pretty good. And then I went on Celebrity Mr. and Mrs. with me and my partner, and we had a really nice time.
And Robin Gibb from the Bee Gees, and Steve Bakke, I think, Chapman player. Yeah.
It does seem like a bizarre sort of like wish fulfillment thing where all of Theo's ambitions just come true, which is really sweet.
I think he wrote this age like 14 or so, right? That diagram. I think he would have done exactly the same diagram age 22 when he wrote this book.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Just substitute out Liverpool for Arsenal. Absolutely. And he'd be like, yeah, I'll do it at Arsenal instead. That's
I mean, I don't know if he'd even do that. He might just be like, you know, there's still time maybe for me to go on loan. I think the main adjustment would be like, grow beard.
Yeah,
grow beard, receding hairline. That's
some facial hair, and yeah, I think that would be the major change. I think it's very endearing. Like
it's very sweet, and I think
he was 14 when he wrote that.
I don't know. It could be a bit younger, to be honest.
Yeah,
the diagram I think is a little bit younger, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say like 2 years before he's in the World Cup squad. Imagine if they found that.
Mad. I think he would. Yeah,
let's spit out their pot noodles.
Yeah, I guess. I think it'd be okay. It'd be harder to pitch a book without a writer to help you. But at the same time, it could very possibly be that, like, you know, they were like, and so Theo, just tell us about this book. What you plan to do? Or people were like, are you planning on writing a sequel to this book? Because it has to be a bit more exciting than the first Theo. So he was like, okay, cool. Two wives.
Two wives. Hopefully one dies. Let's find out.
They die, but it has to be a bit more confident than that, Theo. When I'm old, I'm sad.
Small bungalow?
Yes, a small bungalow.
Did I tell you it's in the Caribbean? Yeah.
Him on Celebrity Mr. and Mrs. is incredibly sweet. Yes, and it's worth saying, he spends about 3 pages talking about this.
Yes. Because it's like the only other thing that happened in his life ever. That's the only.
But like, he entire seasons at Southampton have less time.
That is true.
Then what is effectively 20 minutes on ITV? Like,
I don't see this is a good thing, because like so many other football books will just do that. We'll recap every season by season, match by match. Whereas he's focusing on the things I really care about, like that. And the time he upset Beverly Knight because he's like doing a hate crime towards Andre Arshavin in the toilet and calling him the meerkat. At his birthday party, and then Beverly Knight misses her start time or something. Bizarre.
It's just amazing, because the amount of detail he goes into, each paragraph is a different question they asked him on Celebrity Mr. and Mrs., to the point that he ends the bit by saying, like, so we got 1 out of 3. We did pretty well there. Like, it's just amazing. The bit that is really sweet is when who screamed more on the roller coaster at Thorpe Park? Which he goes into so much detail. He goes into so much detail as to explaining why they got that question wrong. Because apparently Mel said that she screamed more. So Mel said that he screamed more, and Theo said that she screamed more. And he has to sort of go like, yeah, no, she did scream more. But as James Balchin has already said, they were happy screams. I was doing sad screams. She was doing happy screams. So that's where it came from, really. Like, it's like he's like someone sort of like doing an interrogation on him.
It's his version of dealing with adversity off the pitch. rich, basically. I feel like that's probably one of the biggest things he kind of dealt with is, you know, people not believing like in the volume of the screens.
Yeah.
But again, when you consider their relationship, which has been, you know, has not been tested, and I think done through their own mature way of dealing with the press, I think that, again, it's created a very nice bubble of disassociation for their romance, where it can be like,
right.
Mel, what are you like? Anyway, let's go Ferrari shopping,
yeah,
which is a rarity for most people to kind of deal with. So,
like early on when she is 16, he's like, Victoria Beckham took her jeans shopping, and no one had ever done that before. They were very expensive jeans. Anyway, back to Ferrari.
If you're meeting as teenagers and a guy's like, I'm a professional footballer, like the odds are a lot of the time that guy as a teenager is going to go on to become like a car salesman.
Yeah.
And so for someone to like meet someone as a teenager and be like, I'm going to be a professional footballer, who then goes from Southampton to playing for Arsenal at like the height of their success. Mm-hmm. It's, I think they probably both, even though they seem kind of green, they remain very grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That Mr. and Mrs. is probably one of the biggest tests for their relationship. Yeah. We didn't know the exact answers.
Like, guys, I know you want to hear all about the scandal, the big scandal of my career, the Mr. and Mrs. Thorpe Park fiasco.
I didn't know if I could trust her again, but we had to work on rebuilding that.
But yeah, bless them. Bless those two.
Very
bless
sweet.
Those lovely kids.
James, I know there's another side to Theo that you were interested by.
Yeah, obviously, as we've said, he's such an innocent little guy. And he talked a little bit about shenanigans and pranks that he'd get up to. And they're just so tame. They're like the most tame pranks you've ever heard in your life. So the first time I mentioned that, he talks about pillow fights, which is very like teenage girl slumber party, isn't it?
Extremely.
I've been to one, but it feels like it is.
That was very much like you with the Thorpe Park incident. Not that I've been to one.
I've been to one.
The happy screams. God.
They pranked the woman who I think it's the woman called Julia who, when they were staying, it was like Diggs, isn't it? Like you.
Yes, Diggs. Yeah.
So they pranked her. It's just like such a tame prank. They rang up saying, I think they'd been into London, hadn't they?
Yes.
And they were supposed to be getting the train back. They're like, oh, we've missed our train. We're not going to be back till about midnight. And then they were just like, only kidding, we're here. Terrible prank. That's rubbish.
It's so funny because it ends with her with Theo being like, she was not happy. You're like, yeah, for literally 30 seconds.
It's like high five, like, we really got her there. Like, that is a terrible prank.
Yeah, Theo Walcott's sense of humor in terms of pranking is kind of like when a toddler tries to scare you. They jump out and go, Daddy, yeah! And you go, oh, no! I got you, Daddy. You sure did, baby.
Yeah.
You sure did, Pumpkin. My goodness.
Well, that one's going in the autobiography.
If we ever get through this... And then, survived this caper. Oh, I'm gonna put it in the autobiography.
And his creme de la creme of pranks. His prank of all pranks was when he used to call himself the underwear bandit. So he put pants on his head and run around calling himself the underwear bandit, hitting people with towels. And that's his version of a great prank. But what I liked more than that was the fact that years later, Jake Thompson of Torquay United. Reminded him of it.
Oh, like, yeah.
The underwear bandit made a real impression on Jake Thompson. Talking, you know, at least all things about this thing.
Years later, when he's at Torquay,
Theo, mate, you're busy. Like, actually, I'm getting ready for a Champions League game. He's like, oh, I was just thinking about the underwear bandit. Do you remember that? not really. So weird. Like, such an inane thing, isn't it, to remember?
Yeah, it was in Diggs. That was also in his Diggs at Southampton, right?
That was Diggs, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Jake Thompson was like, did we ever find out who the underwear bandit was? Oh, that mysterious masked man? And he was like, I'll never tell.
That whole innocent side of it.
All I know is he was fast.
He was what the press would describe as a speedster. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was. You stick your underwear in his face. He take off running, your underwear's back in your bed, dry as a bone.
Also, I question the idea of, if you're called the underwear bandit, he doesn't steal underwear, he just hits you with a towel? That's not... You should be called, like, towel hitter.
Yeah, it's some kind of, like, laundry lampooner kind of thing.
Laundry lampooner.
That's good. Yeah, I don't know why he limits himself.
We should message Theo now that he's got lots of time and say, we've been workshopping your superhero, by the way. We've got some new names.
And then next podcast, I'm like, Jack, what the fuck is wrong with your face? And you're like, towel incident. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh my god, that should be our photo for the episode. We should all put underwear. We should all put pants on our head. There's 100% of which. But footballers are truly children. Theo Walcott is literally a child in this book. But we mentioned before how footballers behave like children. But this one, when he gets injured, is really. This is like he has a really bad injury at Arsenal. It's like the relief. It's like a moment of relief. It's like, oh, I can finally do whatever I want. He's lying on the hospital bed. And Gary Lewin, the England physio, said I could do whatever I wanted. I had a burger and chips and some rice pudding. I watched the Terminator on my laptop and went to bed.
Yeah, I made a note next to that line saying that this is the moment I knew me and Theo were kindred spirits. I've never felt more.
That's like what you would do as well. Yeah.
That's my guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's got the Terminator ready on his laptop. Like, whatever's going to happen.
Gary Lewin is like a sort of a guardian angel who also is like saying, like, you can do whatever you want now, Theo. You're free. You could do literally anything you want in the world. What do you want to do? I want to have a burger and chips, rice pudding. And okay, you can do that. You're
being big and scary. Okay.
Would you like some jam with your rice pudding? I'm a footballer, sir.
That's too extreme. I don't like it.
Let's relax ourselves, okay? I'm still coming back from injury, honestly.
He's a strange guy. He's a strange guy. And
there is an exciting side to him, though. He was I really liked was that he was mates with Matt Lucas and they went to see Alice in Wonderland together.
Yeah,
that was odd.
Celebrity side.
His two celebrity friends, Matt Lucas and Robin Gibb from the Bee Gees. Strange guy.
Much to the dismay of Beverly Knight.
Yes, yeah, Beverly Knight's enemy. Beverly Knight is truly
who,
his enemy.
Who does not like it when you bring him up, so don't do it.
Okay, sure.
Trust me.
Yeah. And when he writes his next book, we'll get Beverly on the show to read it with us.
Absolutely furious.
Yeah, to get the other side.
I'd like to hear the book from her. I'd like to hear it from her perspective in her book, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think...
Beverly Knight has a
video. Fucking Walcott.
Yeah. I'm going to say Beverly Knight has a book. Let's see. What's she got? A book.
There's absolutely no way that Beverly Knight has a book that mentions Theo Walcott in it. Let's not buy Beverly Knight's
book.
She
has an album called The Fifth Chapter. And this happens in the fifth chapter of Theo Walcott's book. That's a concept.
Coincidence?
Yeah.
I think not.
I agree. But you're kind of right about the anticlimaticness, because when this book ends, it's all about him kind of trying to get back into the England squad and trying to prove himself as an England player, which he does to an extent. But it kind of ends with him not getting in the next World Cup squad. And that's the end of the book.
It's
a bit sad going on there. But I, you know, in general, it was an enjoyable book. And we got to meet the Underwear Bandit, so that's good. Did this book change you? What do you think? Dane, changed you?
I don't think it changed me. I think it really brought up some feelings that I hadn't experienced for a while regarding Arsenal's performances across seasons.
And once again, sorry about that.
I just feel like he seemed to kind of play down what I believe was a large responsibility for the players. You know, I'm not here for pro Emmanuel Eboué narratives.
Look,
now I am. I understand, and you know, he didn't seem like a great guy, but at the time, I did not need anyone defending him.
Right,
and way too little criticism of Nicholas Bentner.
I do think there should have been a personal apology to you in this book, or to all Arsenal fans in this book. Really.
Yeah. From Nicholas Bentner in Theo's book.
Yeah.
Just guys, afterwards.
Just popping up to say sorry about everything. Bye.
Yeah.
What are you giving out of 10, Dane?
As a autobiography, I think I'd probably give it a 6.
Okay.
I think, but I think as a football autobiography, I think that it's probably good. I'll give it a 7, which doesn't seem like a massive leap, but I'll give it a 7 because I think that there is a large reading demographic of young men and women who would definitely benefit from hearing his story. I think it's a very nice story. It kind of does continue to romanticize the culture of football and the dreams of many kids to be involved as football players. And I think he, you know, as much as we jest and I call him boring, I think he does set a very good example in both his personal life and basically how he conducted himself throughout his career. And I think, yeah, he's definitely, he doesn't seem to have any resentment about his any interactions that he's had or any adversity that he's had within the game. And I think considering how young he was, and as we're all aware of like how the tabloids can attack somebody, especially within the context of receiving an England cap, I think he took it very well and all in his stride. And yeah, definitely gave me very positive ideas about how resolute he is or resilient he is as a player.
It'd be it'd be interesting to read a book now, see, now he's retired, see how, you know, a bit more of a balanced reflection and everything. But I think it would, I really think it'd be largely similar. He seems pretty.
I think it would be largely similar. Yeah. He's quite, I would agree with that actually. I think he's a very, he seems like a very level-headed guy who, I mean, it'd be so easy to be the like very bitter about the whole thing, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be incredibly easy to be better about it. But I think he, you know, the fact that he never played in a World Cup and he, you know, but then went on to have a very successful career. He seems like a good bloke. Good bloke.
What do you give him score-wise, Jack?
I'll give him an 8, to be honest. I really enjoyed this book. I thought there were a lot of horrible Arsenal moments, and I think there were a lot of very funny moments that were accidental. But
I'm going to give it a 7. I also enjoyed it. I enjoyed it much more than I thought it would. And also, I probably would have given it a 6, but I'm giving it an extra point because of the lovely big text. I mean, you can fly through the
lovely
book.
Big text.
Oh, what a great font. What a great font. It was huge. Like, you get through a page every 5 seconds. It was brilliant.
Another page down, another page down. Here we go.
It's largely the process on this podcast. It's just like, please.
A lot of people looking around being like, he's not reading that.
Looking up other people, like, I am actually. The font is very big.
James, score out of 10?
I really enjoyed it, actually.
Okay.
I think he's a lovely lad and got on with it, professional, stood his ground when he needed to. And I learned something, actually, from it.
Oh.
You don't remember this bit. I learned something, a little bit of wisdom from Sir Clive Woodward, who said, "You'll never miss a penalty if you think of a hat." And that will stay with me forever.
What? Oh, yeah. Was it because like, you have to imagine someone wearing a hat in the crowd behind the goal?
You have a big hat. And you just don't take your eyes off the hat and you aim for the hat. It's like, what are you talking about?
Is that how we did it for Johnny Wilkinson?
Yeah, maybe.
It works for that.
Yeah.
It sort of works for that because there's no goalkeeper. But if you're like staring very resolutely at
the spot, imagining the keeper with a hat. Stop imagining the keeper with a hat. It's kicking it straight out every time.
I think in today's world, if you said that in a post-match interview, they would seek help for you.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, wasn't it Felix Magath? I think it was the Fulham manager who talked about how he was helping, was it Hangerland when he got injured by giving him cheese? He mentioned
cheese on his thigh. Yeah.
That everyone was like, okay, well, Felix Magath certifiable. That's the end of his Premier League career, basically.
That's all I needed to hear. Yeah. Get him in a secure unit immediately.
And the same happened with Woodward, was never heard from again, really, in football, was it? So that we went on a break. That was weird. That was a weird... This book was great for reminding me of that bizarre time when Southampton had Harry Redknapp in charge and Clive Woodward also kind of in charge elsewhere.
But Walcott was like, this is fun. I like this.
Revolutionised football, weren't they? Like, we're going to rival Mourinho and Chelsea by training with a tiny ball on a squash court. This is going to work.
Didn't work. What are you giving it, James?
I'm giving it an 8.
8? Okay. Yeah. There we go. So that's 30 in total. That means 7.5? Yeah.
7.5, yeah.
7.5.
Not bad.
Very good, Theo. That might be the best book we've done this series, possibly. Okay. Oh, maybe Rooney's one, Colleen's one might have got better. I can't remember.
Yeah, but I think we mostly gave you that a high one because you weren't there. And we were just having a nice time.
Oh, cheers. Thanks, Jack. Very nice. I was having a nice time, too. Anyway, this week... it's time for the quiz. This week, everybody, you are all named after other people who appeared on All-Star Mr. and Mrs. Dane, you're Phil Tufnell. Jack,
nice.
Jack, you're Ice T, who madly was on an episode with Carol Smiley and David Platt once.
Oh my God, okay.
And James, you're Barry from EastEnders. Okay? So if you know the answer, shout out your new name. And
Barry from EastEnders, was that?
Barry from EastEnders. Or Sean Williamson, you can go whichever you want.
Okay.
Okay. Question number one. Which Arsenal player loved to clatter Theo in training because he was a child?
Sol Campbell.
What's your name?
Phil Tufnell.
Yes.
Sol Campbell?
Correct.
Okay.
So many names.
Phil Tufnell was clattering him?
It's a confusing game. It's a confusing game. Number two, where did Theo and Melanie meet? A, outside Claire's accessory. Oh, no. Sorry. That's A means answer.
Yes. That is the answer.
A, outside Claire's accessories. B, not outside Claire's accessories. C, a third place that isn't Claire's accessories.
1.2, James. The answer was outside Claire's accessories in a shopping centre in Southampton. Can you give me any of his four nicknames?
Yes. Sorry, from EastEnders.
Yep.
Sweet little boy.
Yes, that was the one I thought would be hardest, but yeah, good work.
Lewis.
That's two. Yep. Anyone else? Check your names.
Brazilian?
Check your names.
Phil Tufnell.
Yep. Phil Tufnell.
Underwear bandit.
Sadly not that one. That is a good one. Yeah. That was a good one.
That was a self-made nickname. Iced T, didn't he? Was it the little Brazilian or something like that? Wasn't there a thing where they...
I haven't got that in my notes.
It was one of those things that I circled being like, that's wrong. shouldn't do that.
I haven't got that in there.
Right from EastEnders.
Yep.
T and TJ.
Oh, very good, James. That's a good point.
Yeah, wow.
That was incredible.
Sprung into my mind.
Yeah, but yeah,
Dad called him TJ. I'm not sure why. What's his middle name?
I don't know, but probably James or Jack or something. And TJ was the name of the kid in his books, right? TJ and the
TJ and the Hounds
in his kids' books. Yeah,
I should have remembered that.
Yeah, well, Joel you Cook. Didn't. Very good, James. Stormy is the lead there. Number three, what 90s TV show themed pinball machine did the England players have in the games room at the 2006 World Cup? A, The Sopranos. B, The X-Files. C, Ground Force.
Phil Tufnell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is it the X-Files?
Nope, not The X-Files. I think it's going to give an open goal to someone else.
Ice-T.
Yep.
It's Ground Force, baby.
Ground Force.
I wasn't getting that.
Jim, what is it? The only person who can answer now is still
from EastEnders. Yep. Is it The Sopranos?
Sopranos is correct. Yep,
it's
The Sopranos. Finally, which two films did Theo and Mel watch on their first date?
Oh, Barry from EastEnders.
The hell?
Wow.
They watch Land of the Dead.
Yes.
And I know it. It was a weird one. Was it a remake?
Kind of a remake.
Oh, I remember because I thought that was a strange thing.
Adaptation of a TV series. From the 70s.
Phil Tufnell.
Yeah.
Is it Starsky and Hutch?
No, very close though. Very close.
Ice-T. Jukes Hazard. Ice-T. Jukes Hazard.
That is correct. No. That is correct.
Yeah.
But
yeah. which you would not make now.
No, probably not. But wow. Dane got 1 point, Jack got 1 point, and James Baldwin got 6 points.
Oh my god.
Whoa.
This is a repeat of the 8-2. James will be running up and down a train later, and I'll be like, I'm gonna kick that kid out of this train.
Told you I enjoyed it.
You know when Man City battered Man United, I thought that kid. And every time now when Man United suffer, I think of him every single time.
That's nice. Yeah.
Just turn up outside.
I'm running up and down anymore, are you? Yeah.
I'm waiting until the next time Arsenal soundly defeat Man United. We've beaten them, but when we really beat them, I'm going to find him and ruin his 21st birthday. It's not my birthday. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Just like you didn't.
Good to hear. Jane, you're going to be a great dad.
Yeah.
Where was his? Well, his parents were terrible too. You should have sat down.
You know what? I was going to reward you all with a dramatic reading, but I think time-wise, I'm going to save it for the bonus chapter. So we've got that saved for that. So that is all we've got time for this week. We're back in a fortnight, though. If you can't wait that long, make sure you join the book club. Club on Patreon. Bookworm members of the club get a brand new episode every other week where we chat even more about the book. It's £3.50 to join. Please do, or just support us for a quid. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. In the meantime, do get in touch with us on Twitter @footybookclub, Instagram @footballbookclub. Send us your thoughts, your puns, your Ken Zong requests, anything you want, send us. Thank you very much, Dane.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
We've loved having you on. It's been great fun. Thank you so much for reading Theo Walcott's very long, very large fonted book.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And thank you, Theo Walcott, for writing the book chronicling your amazing and nuanced journey through the wonderful world of professional football.
We will make sure to pass that message on to him. Somehow.
And shout out to Theo's dad, because I don't want any smoke from him. So he's very involved.
Save
thank
yourself.
Thank you, sir, for doing a great job. And shout out to Mel as well, and Theo's mum, who's remained relatively quiet and I think is the source of his stoicism. So, yeah.
Very good.
To the whole Walcott family.
Yeah. Cheers to you, the Walcotts. Anything you want to plug, Dane?
Yes. To those who know him, thank you very much for having me on the show. Please do check out my podcast, Dane Baptiste Questions Everything.
Absolutely.
Well, we've not had Theo Walcott on the show, but we have had Emil Heskey.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Emil Heskey's been on the podcast, as well as Louis Saha. So we've had a few guys on the show. And then if anyone wants to check out some comedy as well, I have a special called The Chocolate Chip, which is currently on YouTube right now. So you can all check it out for free.
Definitely. We'll go and watch that. I'm going to immediately go and listen to the Emil Heskey and Louis Saha episodes. Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, they Louis like
Saha. Great guys. They're very, very nice guys. Very laid back. Louis Saha is, he's had a baby as well, but he is working on a new business venture called Access Stars, which is like a, like an aggregate app for like footballers and the like, and I guess people of the same similar echelon, just to be able to get access to whether it's fashion, holidays, and everything footballers are interested in. So it's in real world. And I'm not sure if you were, Emil Heskey is just in charge of his dynasty, because I think two of his kids play in academies at the moment.
Yeah. I think
wow, so, I didn't
realize
that.
Huh. Yeah, so just very, very nice guys, and definitely worth listening to on the show.
Check that out. Wow. That's not what I expected you to say Louis Saha's up to, like making a compare the market for.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. He's this smart guy, very nice guy, very, very big humanitarian. So,
generally
very concerned about the world.
No idea how to react to that. great. Well done, Louis Saha. Well done.
We read his book. Yeah. We read his book, and it was great.
Inside the Box, right?
That was the book. Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah, go back and listen to that. Actually, you know what? Here's the order for you guys. Listen. Go listen to Dane's episode with Louis Saha, then go back and listen to our Football Book Club episode with Louis Saha as well, and then just enjoy your life. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, James Baldwin, and Dane Baptiste. It was created and produced by James Bug. Thanks to Theo for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Theo retired from football in August 2023. He's since made his long-awaited return to primetime television by doing some punditry work, although yet to hear if he can afford a bungalow in Jamaica. Mel and Theo are still very much happily married, despite still occasionally arguing about who screams most at theme parks. No word yet on who Theo's second wife, age 85, will be, as predicted in the diagram. Clive Woodward lasted just over a year at Southampton before moving into punditry, where he regularly imagines a hat on the cameraman to remember where he should be looking. All-Star Mr. and Mrs. hasn't aired since 2017 and is feared gone forever, and the Underwear Bandit is still loose to this day. The music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used on a Creative Commons 4.0 basis. We'll be back in a fortnight with yet another footballer's autobiography. Until then, bye-bye.
I'm Grongy Maguire, and this is Chantel for Dooch and Pate.
Hello.
We bonded over our love of reminiscing about weird celebrity couples. The ones no one would believe happened if Google wasn't there to back it up.
We want you to join us as we remember when love was young, times were simpler, and we really thought that Angelina and Billy Bob Thornton were going to make it.
Every week, we're joined by a celebrity guest to discuss the showbiz romance they never got over.
I'm loving the premise of this podcast. I think this is what we all need to be talking about at the moment.
Nobody can beat the Beckhams in terms of unions. No one in the world. Everything about the Beckhams is insane.
This is the most fun we've ever had. I feel like I'm literally 12 again. My mum calling me in for dinner and I'm being like, no.
So take our hand and stroll down memory lane with us as we remember
the way they were.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.